Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and there are two fabulous DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. These are by a dear friend of Real Science Radio, Spike Pisaris. And Spike has created simply the greatest astronomy DVDs ever produced. And we have gone through probably hundreds of science DVDs and books, and we recommend only the very best at our store, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store, and you'll love these astronomy DVDs, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy, Volume 1 and Volume 2. You got to get them.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. The evolutionary paradigm presents prehistoric man as grunting cavemen trying to figure out how to light a fire. Well, the Bible teaches that God created mankind in his image and his likeness, so we would expect the worldwide evidence of the earliest humans to show that they were brilliant. There is a beautiful new book that documents this disagreement and compares these opposing models to the actual evidence collected by anthropologists and historians. The book, The Genius of Ancient Man, Evolution's Nightmare, is authored by Don Landis. Don is the president of the Jackson Hole Bible College, and his book is almost as beautiful as Jackson Hole, Wyoming is. Don Landis, thanks for writing this book. Welcome to Real Science Radio.
Well, thank you, Bob, for this opportunity. Good to be with you today.
Well, I am so fascinated by what you have assembled in this book. Could we first share with the audience a few examples of the brilliance of the ancients? There is an Antikythera mechanism that was found on a shipwreck, which was an effort to track the sun and the moon when you couldn't actually see the sun and the moon. Could you describe that? Maybe give us a few other examples.
You bet. The Antikythera machine appears to be an analog computer. It had a number of gears. 30 of the gears, the original bronze gears, are still intact. And the original total number is suggested to be about 37. And it's quite a contraption. It was able to track the different stars, five planets that were then known to the Greeks. Very complex movements of the sun and the moon and the 12 signs of the zodiac.
And this was discovered over a century ago now. Jacques Cousteau returned to the site of the shipwreck trying to find perhaps the remaining gears or another mechanism. And they found a treasure trove of ancient coins. They date this mechanism well. It dates back to about the time of Christ or just B.C., and it was used by the Romans. And Don Landis, when we think about ancient man, we don't think of a mechanized clock that keeps track of constellations and planets. This goes against the evolutionary view that we started off with very low IQ and only gradually became more intelligent.
Exactly. Even though it was discovered about not a century ago, about 1900, plus in there, but it's considered to be about 2,000 years old. So, But it goes back quite a ways. We're not sure. So astounding, it's been ignored. It's just one of the artifacts that keeps popping up from time to time to show incredible intelligence of ancient man.
Could you give us a couple other examples? I've marked a number in your book, but I'd like to hear what's on your mind. What do you think of when you think of the brilliance of ancient man?
Well, some of that stand out to me personally is we had a team of the students from the college help us for about 2 years to do the research. One of them are the huge monolithic stones, megalithic stones that were cut by human hands. Anybody can think, well, that wouldn't be so technologically cut a big stone.
Right.
But when you consider how big they are, or you see how exact they are, then it becomes amazing. There are stones in Baalbek, Greece, at a site there that are 800 tons, estimated 800 tons apiece.
Wow.
They're called the Trilithon. There are three of them, and they're sitting on bedstones of about 300 tons each.
Hmm.
And the way they were constructed, put together in such a way that they endured earthquakes, and the design is amazing. So how did people move 800-ton stones and cut them out of bedrock?
Don,
in Bolivia, there's a site, Pumapunka, that is absolutely amazing. And there the stones are granite and a type of very hard stone. What's amazing about it is not just cut stones like flat sides. They are cut stones in such a way that, the pictures show in the book, that there's indentations cut, and there were stones that were set upright, and then other stones were slid into place to hold them in place, almost like Legos in between. The solstice worship of these places, the astronomical alignments, these people.
Don, you include in your book beautiful full-color photographs of these sites from around the world and all kinds of artifacts. It helps so much for us to understand, to get through the fog of the evolutionary claim to the actual brilliance. I pastor a church, Denver Bible Church, here in Colorado, and we, every few years, we take a Bible tour of Greece, Israel, Italy, Turkey, and I recall in these countries, you find artifacts in Turkey, artifacts going back thousands of years in Istanbul, an obelisk, like you're talking about, these massive stones, and the craftsmanship is approaching perfection, and the ability then to construct with these stones. I remember this is more recent, but the Blue Mosque in Istanbul, I think is, well, say it's around 500 years old or so, the largest mosque in the world. And just down the street from it is a Christian church, Hagia Sophia, built 1,000 years earlier. And you could put the Blue Mosque inside the Hagia Sophia. And that just brings us back even further to the architecture of ancient civilizations has absolutely amazed modern architects, asking the question, how could they have done this without our modern tools?
Yes, when we contemplate what we can do today, we put it in the context of modern technology and computers and engineering. But you're absolutely right. When you go back in some of these artifacts and some of these buildings, for example, the Mayan calendar. Now, just think, you go out on a starlit night and you just look up at the skies with limited ability to see because you don't have telescopes. And you go back to the Mayan calendar, which was more accurate than the Gregorian calendar, which the West used for 1,100 years. So we sit there and say, and our understanding of the movements of the moon and the sun were more accurate than we had for 1,100 years. And they didn't have any computers. So the question is, how did they do this?
And let me just give an illustration of that point to the audience from your book. I mean, we commonly say that the year is 365 and a quarter days. So the Mayans, once they adopted a 365-day calendar, they said, well, it's not 365, it's 365 and a quarter, but not quite. It's actually 365.242, and they even had it to a greater accuracy than that. That's one example of a world filled with examples of their mathematical brilliance, architectural, even technology. There were seafaring peoples. This is an amazing story that I think most of us don't really realize, most of us being modern man.
When we say they didn't have any computers, people would assume they were on the edge of not even having pens and pencils and paper. So, of course, that's the evolutionary paradigm that we're so used to and so influenced by. But we had just an exciting time going back and discovering all these. The book only scratches the surface. Part of the purpose of the book, we decided early, was not that it would be a reference book. We didn't want it to be that. We wanted it to be an introduction book to this whole concept, and so that the average Christian could pick it up and really get a taste for this and an understanding of what we're trying to say.
Mm-hmm. You have examples. Well, there's a sculpture of a dancing girl. The artwork that we find in sculptures and paintings, in fact, there's a recent headline of Neanderthal drawing of seals And there was a paper done just in the last few years where a peer-reviewed scientific paper in secular journals compared the anatomical accuracy when modern artists paint animals. And they looked at like Leonardo da Vinci's painting of animals, and they categorized these as to accuracy. And it shocked them that the most anatomically correct drawings as a group come from the cave drawings of what they think of as cavemen. And this carving that you have here of this dancing girl from, I'm not sure I could pronounce it, Mohenjo-Daro, early Indus Valley, shows just amazing accomplishment in what? Metallurgy and artistry.
They found, Bob, that in an analysis of the ink on some of these drawings, you think, well, they just took charcoal and just, you know, painted on the cave wall, but not so. It's amazing. Even the ink has been analyzed to find that it's a really complex ink. It's truly amazing. The ancient man were intelligent. They made an image of God and could do incredible things. The drawing on page 46, not a drawing, but the picture, overlaid with the geometric circles and the geometry from Egypt is of Ramesses II, the symmetry. And that was a huge face, a huge statue. We're not talking about a 3-inch high object. To be able to cut that from granite, you know, just it baffles us. How did they do this?
Yeah, and
we're still not sure how they did it.
As you were describing this, I showed this to my producer and our board operator, and you illustrate with these overlain circles, different colored circles, the symmetries, and it continues to astound. Now, this is Ramesses II, if I recall. I don't think this is mentioned in your book, but he built basically a mausoleum for himself, and on the ceiling is an ancient calendar. And you mention how the ancient Babylonians, the Egyptians, they began to track the heavens. They developed the 12 constellations of the zodiac. What we find about these ancient men is that they pondered the same questions we ponder today. They had a brilliance of analysis. Now, would you agree, Don Landis? And by the way, Don is the president of Jackson Hole Bible College, and he is the general editor of this book, The Genius of Ancient Man, Evolution's Nightmare, published by Master Books, a beautiful book. I highly recommend it. Don, would you agree, and perhaps I got this idea from your book, the reason Christians have not focused on all this evidence of the truth of Genesis is that ancient man became so cultic, so evil, human sacrifice, sexual immorality, temple prostitutes, that we as an entire body of Christ, we've tended to shy away from it and look the other way because of how vulgar and grotesque it all was.
Yes, I think you're right. That's a very good point to mention to the listeners today. We talk a lot about that in the book, and we talk in the book about the series of axioms in the back of the book that help people, we think through sequential thinking on this. We don't believe, for example, that Satan can create. Only God can create. Satan only perverts. He only distorts. Mm. God comes along and creates the world. It gives truth to early man, gives truth to Adam and Eve, for example. Begins then eventually to reveal truth as we have in the Word of God today. And Satan can't create, so he can take these things and create a distortion. He manipulates and he counterfeits everything that God does. He wants to be like God, after all, so everything he does is a counterfeit. And so we tend to shy away from it and run away from it, seeing it as a cult. In fact, Bob, in the book, there's an interesting page in the beginning that warns Christians to be careful as a cautionary thing, because we caution Christians to, when they get into this and start studying and reading, because it is occultic. It is cult material because Satan distorts it. He just mutilates the truth of God. Mm-hmm. And we catch people's breath. When I talk to them about the book, for example, we say, you know, we see some of these empires and these pyramids and these great objects that they built facing east. We see them lined up to the stars, solstice alignment, solstice worship. We see mounds. We believe that the Tower of Babel was nothing more than a human man-made mountain. So we see the significance of mountains and mounds all over the world. one of our students did a whole year research, and we estimate that there are 100,000 mounds in the United States alone, the largest of them being in Cahokia, southern Illinois, which is an amazing place. Who invented the idea of mountains being significant and facing east? And who invented the idea of human sacrifice? Well, we Christians immediately say, well, all these pagan cults and all these gurus and all these horrible places. Mm-hmm. No, God invented the idea of mountains being significant. It's all through the Bible. God invented the idea of facing east. The Garden of Eden was in the garden itself was in the east of Eden. Why did he do that? Why did he create the earth so the sun rises in the east? He did this for specific purposes. Mm-hmm. Who invented the idea of human sacrifice? Our God did. From the foundation of the world, before the foundation of the world, his plan was that Jesus would give his life for us on the cross. What an amazing thought. He knew this as part of his whole decreed plan. Mm. And then Satan comes along and distorts it
and mutilates Don, it. And Don Landis, your axioms you referred to in the back of the book, you mentioned that axiom, it's number 8 and number 9 related, that Satan, in fact, anyone evil, the fallen angels, human beings in rebellion against God, pervert. They take what is good and they pervert it. So sin, evil, in a sense, doesn't exist on its own. It's all something that is perverted, something that began with God and something good. C.S. Lewis helps to explain that concept so well. And you point out Satan is the ultimate counterfeiter. The mounds in America that you guys have mentioned, my wife Cheryl grew up in Ohio. In your book is the Serpent Mound, the Snake Mound in Ohio. And I asked her about it and we looked it up and she said, yeah, we went as grade school. We went on a class trip. And so we go to Google Earth and sure enough, you could see it as stunningly perfect detail as though it had just been created, Serpent Mound. And so there was a similar trend around the world by human beings of cultures separated by many centuries and languages to try to reach up to the heavens, to sacrifice to a deity or deities. There are these accounts of a flood, a global flood or a flood that wiped out all humans, the animals, usually some kind of a vessel that saves people. These are all global trends that point to the truth of the first 11 chapters of Genesis.
It does. It's amazing. You see, in Genesis 3:15, you've got the Lord God saying to the serpent, Satan using a serpent to tempt Adam and Eve. So God comes to the serpent and says that he's going to crawl on his belly and the enmity between the woman's seed and his seed. And you have the first mention of the cross in Genesis 3:15. Satan takes this then and then gets people to start worshiping the snake. Mm. And so you see snakes everywhere. You see it at Chichen Itza, the Yucatan Peninsula. You see it at Anchor in heads of snakes everywhere, flying serpents in many places. You see the snake mound you talk about in southern Ohio, 1,300 foot long, coiled snake. And by the way, what's fascinating is that a snake's mouth is open and it looks like it's swallowing an oblong circle and looks exactly like an egg. Well, an egg is a symbol in all these cults of a seed. Mm. Satan going after the seed, Genesis 3:15 in southern Ohio. I mean, it really becomes amazing. And you can see the counterfeit of Satan everywhere.
Your book opens up with something called oop arts. I love this oop arts. They are artifacts, right? That when they're found, whether by a farmer, a rancher, or an archaeologist, they shock the experts who then try to analyze these oop arts. Could you explain that for us?
Yes, it's a term. We did not invent that. It's the idea of out-of-place artifacts. These artifacts should not be where they are. They don't fit. If evolution's true, men came out of the slime, drug their women around by the hair, and invented fire and the wheel. And yet we go back into these ancient days and find things that don't exist. They're out of place. And the evolutionary paradigm doesn't allow for it. It doesn't have an explanation. So they're basically ignored. And there, of course, there are hundreds and thousands of them. And not just the idea of artifacts. One of our premises in our presuppositional thinking in the book is that if the Bible is true, man is made in God's image, then we would expect to find, as you opened the program today, we'd expect to find data that shows his intelligence. On the issue, and some of this overlaps, on the issue of the presuppositional idea of the Bible being true, and I believe that, then the Tower of Babel really existed. And when that tower was built and God scattered these people, they took the ideas that were started at Babel all around the world. And so you find commonality of pyramids and solstice worship and and trying to get into the heavens and dolmens and the obelisks, hundreds of them all over the planet. Thus, all this begins to, of course, verifies. You don't prove the scriptures in that sense, but we verify. We
corroborate
as they see all this. Yes, exactly. But it doesn't fit the paradigm of evolution. So it becomes a nightmare for the evolutionist because he has no way to explain this.
Yeah, I love that.
One of the newest ways that they're trying to explain this, we're finding fascinating, would have been laughed at 50 years ago. Then von Däniken introduced the idea in Chariot of the Gods some time ago.
Aliens.
And now it's almost every other History 2 channel is talking about it special, where they say, well, we can't explain this. We must have been seeded here by a superior race of aliens, flying saucers, et cetera, that came here and deposited human beings. That's what we hear so often today as to how they're trying to explain all this incredible data.
Yeah, Real Science Radio here. We've been doing this show for many years, been on the air 5 days a week for 22 years. And on Fridays, we do our science shows. And we refer to this as the punting syndrome, where they punt the atheist, evolutionist, but they don't realize they punt it. Like you try to ask them, how could life arise because it's so complex? And they say, well, aliens put it here. And we point out, well, then all you did was punt. You didn't solve the problem of how life arises. It would be just as complex somewhere else as it would be here in the super hospitable Earth. And so to explain the complexity of a single cell, They contemplate entire civilizations and space travel and genetic engineering and all to explain one living cell. And now they're proposing trillions upon trillions of parallel universes because ours is so amazingly fine-tuned for life. And so they've got alien civilizations seeding life on Earth and trillions, virtually infinite number of parallel universes just to cling to their materialist worldview.
And it's how fortunate that they can push it so far away that can't be proved or disproved. And so you're right. Oh, what a great analogy. They just punt it, not only punt it, they punt it out of the ballpark.
Yeah, that's right. And they deny that they're punting. That's funny. Yeah. Oh, by the way, we were celebrating that Tim Tebow was signed by the Patriots. So that's just a recent news story. Speaking of football, an anachronism is another word for oops-arts, and that's when you find something that seems to be out of place historically, and that seems to be one of the norms when things are found from ancient civilization. Don Landis, it seems to me, let me ask you this, I'm not sure. It seems to me that when we go back and we look at ancient civilizations, we find this sophisticated finance and contracts, language, architecture, astronomy, but we don't really have evidence of, say, the civilizations before that, where they were simply unable to function as sophisticated human beings. It's like when the record of ancient man begins, it begins with architecture and metallurgy and art and music and so on.
Yeah, that's a great point. You dig down into the data, and you really don't go back to barbarism that evolution suspects. You do see cave creatures, and men living in caves, for example, in Europe, but that is very easy to understand coming off of the flood and understanding what's coming off of the ice age, and that's a fascinating whole study in itself. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's like it's full-blown intelligence. Matter of fact, in the Bible, you know, within a generation, you have music and metallurgy, and Adam and Eve themselves could talk with God. They had a conscience.
Animal husbandry, right? A building of cities. God built us with these abilities. I hear that we do not use our entire brain. I hear that. I don't know that. And it's not hard to believe. And in fact, if Darwinism were true, Darwinism would bring about that which you need to survive. It wouldn't bring about a tremendous excess capacity, say, of intellect. Yet ancient men seem to be more intelligent than we are, and we have not been getting smarter. we've been deteriorating through genetic deterioration.
Yes, we've been going downhill, just like illustrated in Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel. God took his mind away. He started acting like an animal. It's interesting that Adam, God said, name these animals. He took them out to name. And I do that for my students. I give them an object and just point to, they give me a new name for that.
Wow.
With meaning and purpose.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult thing to do. It shows great intelligence.
Wow. So, Don Landis, we're about out of time. The best way to get the book, The Genius of Ancient Man, would it be to go to Answers in Genesis bookstore? How do you recommend
yes.
we get it?
Yeah, there are two ways to do it. You can go to www.answersingenesis.org. It's online there for sale, and it's been selling very well. We're very excited. We've asked the Lord to use it for his glory, and we believe he's answering our prayer on that. And you could also write to us at Jackson Hole Bible College, and our website is www.jhbc.edu. And we have also, by the way, Bob, a blog site with quite a few articles, which are articles now putting up to addendum this and to add ideas and concepts, people's questions, or trying to answer those. And so you can go to our college website, and it links to our a blog site. And,
okay.
So you can order the book there.
So jhbc.edu will get someone to the blog. All right. Yep. Don Landis, it was an honor to speak with you. Thank you so much for joining
Thank
us.
Thank you, Bob. You ever come to Jackson Hole, look us up.
Well, we've been there a number of times, so we'll plan on doing that. God bless you.
Look forward to it.
This is Bob Enyart, Real Science Radio. Our website, realscienceradio.com, will link to this book by Don Landis, The Genius of Ancient Man. So you'll be able to get that also at our own store. We have so many wonderful science resources pointing to the gospel of Jesus Christ as, of course, being the central truth of mankind. So please check us out, realscienceradio.com. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune into Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, you can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYARTS. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner, on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils, you'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then Mount St. Helens, the Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the Earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYARTS, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.